Please be seated, won't you? Well, good morning.
Good morning.
So, do you remember getting your first bicycle, or your first roller skates, or your first ice skates, or whatever it might have been along those lines? Do you remember the excitement that you felt at maybe having that symbol of childhood freedom? Do you know what I'm talking about? You might have watched older kids in your neighborhood ride their bikes around or do all these kinds of things, and you might have been eager to get on there and try it for yourself. And I'm willing to bet that the first time you rode it, you didn't quite get it just right. And, you know, now we have training wheels, which makes it a little easier, but not that long ago, often you'd get a bike without any kind of training wheels or anything. And I think if you were to remember what it was like to ice skate or to roller skate or any number of other things, do you remember getting on those for the first time? You know, you go to the roller rink and everyone's going around as fast as they can, and you suddenly realize that there's something going on, and guess what it is? Well, it's hard to kind of figure out the balance, right? So I remember the first time I went roller skating, and guess what happened? Fell down, and eventually, your first couple of times around, or maybe for the first three or four times that you go, you're holding on to the railing, and you're going all around. I tried ice skating one time, and it didn't work at all, and I've never been able to figure that out. When you hear the gospel for today, maybe you don't connect that, but do you remember the first time you came to faith? The first time that you came to a deeper relationship with Jesus? Or the first time that you came to the realization that God is real and God is present in your life? Sometimes I think when that happens, we get excited. There's nothing more fun than a new convert in a church. And I think I told you the story. We had a woman at my last church named Freshta, and she came to want to get to know Jesus. And as she was getting to know Jesus, guess what happened? Well, she became exhilarated, and she'd come from the Muslim tradition, and she went and memorized all four of the Gospels in about 3 months. This was the kind of passion that she had, and that was part of her tradition. And I remember her excitement and exhilaration at finding the faith. And maybe you didn't quite have that kind of passion, but you probably had some of that passion. But what happens when we fail, when we falter, when we don't quite get it just right? I think in the gospel for today, we're given this example by Jesus because he's trying to help people get to understand the mercy of God. And so there's a series of gospels that show the unexpected people, those who fall hard, those who fall often, those who have a really hard time with their faith or with their relationship. And he uses them as example after example after example. And on the other side, he uses people that are assumed by their status or their place in the society at the time to have it all, to have the faith. In today's gospel, we have this great moment, you know? Because it's sort of like after you've been a pro at riding your bike, or you've been a pro at roller skating, have you ever looked around and thought, well, I'm really glad I'm not one of those new guys? Or sometimes in our faith, we can get so secure that when we see someone struggling, we say, boy, I'm really glad I've got it all figured out. I'm glad I'm not in their position. And I think sometimes we don't really want to think of ourselves as judgmental, but it's easy, isn't it, to judge others, to place ourselves in a higher position just by the fact that maybe things are working a little better for us in our life. And this is really what the judge in the story or what the person walking in is doing. They come into the temple and they say, boy, I'm glad I'm not like all these other sinners. I'm faithful. And Jesus says, no, that's not God's mercy. That's not God's faith. What is God's faith? But it's the one who sits there humbly and says, I am wretched. God, have mercy on me. I am sinful. God, have mercy on me. What does a church look like that really believes that? Because isn't it easy sometimes to walk into a church and feel judged? I'm not saying here necessarily, but any church. Have you ever been to a congregation and you didn't wear the right clothes? Either you're dressed up too much or you're dressed down too little. That's the surface stuff. But then there's the other looks that we give each other. And you know, we might even do it here, but I've been to places where you're sort of looked at and you wonder. And it's a natural tendency in our human condition to judge others. And Jesus is warning us, that's not God's mercy. But what does a church look like that lives that theology? What if when we come in on Sunday morning, we see people begging for God's forgiveness, begging for God's love in our sanctuary, crying out to God? The thing is it happens every week, whether you see it or not. It's an interesting perspective being in front of the congregation, and there are people who come and are clearly struggling with their relationship, clearly going through challenges in life, clearly needing God's mercy to be present right there and right then. So what does that church look like? How do we become that? As I'm sure you're aware, it's stewardship season. And so you've been hearing the last several weeks, if you've been able to come, different things about ministries around the church, about serving in the altar or serving in as a lecturer or reader or being a part of a small group or being part of youth ministries or children's ministries. And today we have a particular focus on outreach. And you'll be hearing more about that in a little bit. But how many of you heard about the little incident at Carrabba's this week, the restaurant? I'm just curious. If you didn't hear about it, there's a waiter there that, and I'm not sure how this person figured this out, but evidently is gay or homosexual. And a person decided, even though they got good service, not to tempt them, not to give them a tip, but left them a rather judgmental series of statements about that they wouldn't tip them because of their lifestyle choice. And it kind of got the news. It got out. That's kind of, you know, the good thing about Facebook and those things is these kinds of things start to get named quickly. And I was thinking about this when I was preparing the sermon that hadn't happened, and I saw it, and I thought, there's the challenge, isn't it? There's the theology. And so I kept thinking about our own congregation and what we live into and what it might mean for us to be a congregation of mercy, about what it might mean to really live that gospel in the places where we are. And we're not a perfect church, but we try. And I kept thinking about the outreach ministries that we are attempting to live into, where we try to offer from our bountiful sense of what we have to others. And a couple of weeks ago, we were invited to a little conference, and Sue and I went to talk about an elementary school that's in our neighborhood. And you know that we do the Backsnack program for Comanche Elementary. So if you don't know what that is, the Backsnacks, we take a little bag of food. We used to take backpacks, and now it's a plastic bag because that's a little easier. We take a plastic bag that has about 2 days' worth of food for a little kid. And it goes to the families or the children that have been identified as food insecure, meaning they may not have food at home, to make sure that over the weekend they have a little bit that can get them through that, because that can make such a difference in a kid's life and their ability to study and focus. And so we take 85 little plastic bags every week, and we sort them and get them ready, and they go and they're delivered. And this program is supported by harvesters and a bunch of volunteers. Well, we've been praying as a congregation for a more local outreach, and this is just a couple of miles away. And did you know that Comanche Elementary School is a Title I school, which means more than 40% of the kids there receive free lunches or free breakfasts because of their economic situation? At this particular school, it's more like 85% of the kids receive free lunches and free meals. It's an immigrant, sort of has an immigrant population, meaning that we were talking with the principal, and they have roughly 15% of the kids who start kindergarten this year will finish sixth grade in that school. That's how much transition there is in that community. And it's got a lot of apartment complexes and other things around it. And I was astounded when I went there and I saw a picture on the wall of all the students. And I think if you went there 15, 20 years ago, you would not have seen this, but it was all different shades of humanity. All different shades. From all over the places in the world, from Mexico and Guatemala and from Africa and from India and people from all over the world. And so most of the kids speak another language besides English, and they have all these challenges, and they ask us, can you partner with us? Because they're having a challenge doing all the things they need to do. And because of budget cutbacks and things like that, they don't have the extra money for tutoring that they used to have, and they don't have the extra money for after-school programs. And so we were at this meeting and being with about 15 other congregations linking with other schools that are in the same situation. And I kept thinking while I was there, can St. Thomas be the church of mercy that instead of just having conversations about the problems in schools is willing to invest its time and its resources and its talent in this particular community that's just in our backyard? There's another ministry that we're starting up that I think is going to be really important for us. We have a wonderful gift at St. Thomas. We have some adults that have special needs, and we have folks like Eric, who has Down syndrome that serves at the altar, and Morgan, who has autism, that often makes salsas for us and is one of our greeters. We have a number of adults who have blessed our community by being here and being a part of who we are. And one thing I loved about St. Thomas when I got here is that we include people of all kinds in our worship and in our leadership. And one of the things that's happened is funding for programs that help these adults find meaning in their lives has gone away. And there's 8,000 folks like Eric and Morgan in the community in Kansas that might find themselves suddenly with no services left at home, or if they don't have parents that are caring for them left in a group home, and they may have no meaningful work or no meaningful contribution to the community. And so what we're trying to do is on Mondays and Fridays, you're going to hear more about this, something called Tom's Helpers. And we're going to have, right now we have four folks who are coming, and they're going to be part of the staff at St. Thomas. And this is a partnership that we have currently with the Olathe School District. And eventually we hope to expand it to Blue Valley and to Shawnee Mission as well. And they're going to come and be here for about 5 hours on Mondays and 5 hours on Fridays and going to help with the different things we need done at the church, sorting the bulletins, cleaning things up, getting tables ready, and preparing our little bags for the kids so that they have things to do during worship instead of listening to the sermon. all those kinds of things. A great opportunity to make a difference. You might think, well, that's convenient for the church, but what it means is that we value these people's ability to contribute, to participate, to have meaning. Remember the stories about people who are on the streets or cast out that Jesus talks about? It's easy for us to cast aside a person who's not normal. But man, they want to contribute. And they might love doing the things that we don't want to do. And they have so much to give and so much to offer. So they'll have name tags and be part of our staff and contribute to our community. And the hope is that they learn to work independently so that then you might find them in a job somewhere else in community where they might be able to sustain themselves. I think these are two examples of how we can be a church that lives the theology of mercy, that lives into that kind of ministry. You know, it'd be easy right now. We've built this beautiful building. We've kind of touched everything up. The church is looking good. The grounds look beautiful. Wouldn't it be easy to live into the theology of the first righteous person in the story? About how great things are and how easy things can be. We just got back from diocesan convention, and so Ben and I were walking around in that kind of attitude, and Kevin, you know, with all the other priests, oh, wow, you know, we've got a really big parish hall. What do you have? We had a balanced budget last year. You know, what about you? You know, right, Kevin? Yeah, and we got two tables at convention this year because we had so many people there. But I'm telling you, we kind of bumped St. Michael's. We were bumping St. Michael's, the big church up north, you know. They put us together, and we had to share a table with them. That's never happened before. Well, they were shocked. You see how easy it would be to fall into that? Or we can see that the challenge before us is to live into the gospel, to use what we have here as tools for Jesus' ministry. That we should wear these buildings out. That we should have so much going on, and that we should be willing to live into risk in the community. So I'm asking that you pray this week. We've been talking to you about the use of your time, talent, and treasure in this particular place. I know you have lots of other things that are a part of your life, but I think that you come here to be lifted up, to hear of the holiness of God, to have time for prayer, and to be part of a community that can care for you and for others. I think this is a holy place. And I think we have a lot of work to do as a congregation, and a lot of prayer to be had, and a lot of new things to imagine. We're only just beginning to even think about it. But I sincerely hope you'll pray about your time, talent, and treasure in this place, and be willing to continue to sustain and encourage this congregation to grow. We have so much to offer. And then I have another little challenge for you. And if you're willing to do it, to show up at Carrabba's in the next couple of weeks and to ask for the waiter that was discriminated against and to show God's mercy in his life. Amen.